Linda walked up to the two, handing a fold-out chair to Frank.
Here you go, Mr. Bishop.
Just Frank is fine, Linda.
Frank looked at Jonathan, clearly wondering whether or not he should continue.
It's all right, Frank. She needs to know, too.
Linda passed Jonathan a cigarette as Frank sat in his chair.
All right. So, I passed a couple stalled cars on the road. No one was in them, and they were locked up. But one of them was in the middle of the road. No one even bothered to push it off to the side. I kept going until I got to the overpass. Highway 52 was bad. John, everything went out. Every car on the highway was broken down. A lot were stopped in the lanes. Like someone pushed pause and everything stopped. I didn't go down to the road. There were a few people wandering around, talking to each other and crying. They all looked clueless, so I didn't see any point in going down there to ask them what happened. A few of the cars were torn up pretty good. Must have lost control. One car was on its back in the ditch. Yeah. There was a sheet covering something beside one of the cars. I'm pretty sure it was a body. John, if there was a body there, cars stalled all over the place and people wandering around like idiots, this must be pretty widespread. It has to be pretty bad to leave someone lying in a ditch and not do anything but throw a sheet over whoever it was.
I think we need to make sure. If things aren't back to normal within a couple of days, I think we should go into town and see if there's any information. State police or National Guard or someone has to be there keeping order if Rochester is out too. If anything, we need to get out there and try to get a hold of some water and food before everything is gone. If the power is still out by then.
I actually thought the same thing. We can stop and grab the other bike at my neighbor's place. I have a couple of duffel bags we can strap to our backs. Be sure to take any cash you have. If any stores are open, I doubt they'll be taking IOUs.
Linda, honey, if it comes to that, I think you should stay here.
Johnny!
Linda, listen. First, if people are hurt or worse, I don't want you seeing it. Second, you should be here in case the power comes on or someone official shows up. Third, you suck on a bicycle. I'll leave you the pistol so you don't get scared.
He's right. I only saw one other bike anyways.
Okay, boys. If things are still that bad in a couple of days, all I ask is that if you do end up going, you be careful and don't leave me alone for too long. Frank, you're welcome to stay with us tonight if you want.
Nah, I've been sleeping alone in that house since Martha died. This don't change anything. Jonathan, set your alarm early if you two want campfire coffee in the morning. And, thanks for the hospitality, ma'am.
Frank started heading back to his house, half a bottle of vodka still in his hand. San Diego, California. Throughout the night, both inside and outside of the gate, Alvarez saw the red and blue lights of emergency vehicles and the National Guard trucks hitting the streets going towards San Diego. Police helicopters zigzagged the sky with their bright spotlights shining on top of buildings and in alleyways.
Everyone, please stay inside for your own safety. Further information will be given after the curfew is lifted at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. Everyone, please stay inside for your own safety. Further information will be given after the curfew is lifted at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning.
The friendly message came through the loudspeakers of one of the vehicles. Meanwhile, inside the base, helicopters were coming in and out, moving people and supplies, he assumed. The air smelled of the bellowing fumes from the deuce and a half trucks going to and from different points on the base, and bulldozers moving huge concrete blocks like those used to separate highway lanes, to block gates and vulnerable points of the perimeter. Because of the curfew, gate detail was pretty boring. The sergeant Alvarez was assigned to let him and the other private that he didn't know take turns sleeping. But for Alvarez, at least, there was no sleep. His mind was running on overdrive, thinking about what was happening and what was going to happen. He was so preoccupied, in fact, that he did not notice when one of the big deuce and a halfs stopped at the gate and a Marine addressed him from the back of the truck.
Private!
Not knowing if it was an NCO or an officer, Alvarez jumped up and went to parade rest.
Hoorah!
Are you with Echo Company?
Yes, sir!
Can that, sir, shit. I work for a living. Grab your gear and get your ass in here. Your drill sergeant is waiting. Sergeant, send your other guy over here to get a case of this water. Orders came down that everyone is to empty canteens and use only bottled water from now on. Clear?
Why's that?
The brass says there have been some flu outbreaks in the city. They think it might be something in the water, and they don't want us taking any chances. That's all I know. Let's go, Private.
You heard him, Private.
The other private went over to grab the water, while Alvarez grabbed his stuff and climbed into the back of the truck. Inside the truck, Miguel saw several men from his company looking at him, and several other men, some of whom he recognized from other companies in his battalion. He took a seat by Private Johnson, who was smiling.
What's going on?
I don't know. I bet we're going downtown, though. Did you hear shots from your gate?
No. From where?
Yeah. I swear we started hearing gunfire coming from the direction of the hospital just before they picked me up. The fucking commies are probably invading, and I bet we're going to go kick some ass.
Alvarez just looked forward. All of the men in the truck looked scared or on the verge of vomiting, except for Private Johnson, who was beaming while he rubbed the barrel of his M16.